Hello, and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode 139, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars. And joining me this week, the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man who's no stranger to having an accident himself, is Mr. Tony Esmond.
I'm still too excited to talk.
Yeah.
Yes, we've got... Well, I'm sure a lot of our new listeners. If you're a new listener, welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got an exciting little chat for you in a minute involving two big names.
Yeah.
But that's what you're here for. You're here for some Accident Man talk.
Yeah.
Yes. And hopefully you've seen or you're going to see the film soon. But do you know what people may not have seen, Tony?
Oh God. Is it Comic House?
It is indeed. Yeah. It's comichouse.com.
I felt sure you were going to do, if you never get angry, if you never get involved, and if you never get caught, you might like Comic House. I was certain you'd go with that one.
That would have been a great intro.
Yeah. Well, I'm not that good, you know. But Comic House are. Yes, they are the people that help sponsor this little podcast and keep us giving you weekly free episodes every week, and thank you very much for that, gents. Support them today. On their website, there's a huge library of comics you can order printed copies of, like the brilliant Comic House anthology itself, and more. You know that Dan Butcher's Vanguard is on there, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah. We got an email through this week from Pete saying they're adding on a ton of more content. The name of the company escapes me. Is it Avatar?
Dynamite.
That's it. Yeah, Dynamite. Yeah. So there's a bunch of Army of Darkness comics on there, which I can't wait to read.
I think.
It's going to be great. So sign up and check those ones out.
Yeah, Comic House has loads of cool stuff from the likes of IDW, Judge Dredd and beyond, plus a load of small press and independent creators that we know. Mm-hmm. A lot of them past guests on this show, and probably future guests on this show. So definitely check out comichouse.com. If you'd like to read your books digitally, though, there's also a Comic House app. And it's brilliant. We use it. It's available now. You can get a 14-day free trial. And for only £3 a month, you get access to all of the digital comics on the Comic House library, of which, like I said, Vanguard's on there, The Red Mask from Mars, Comic House Anthology.
Indeed.
There's just so much awesome stuff on there. So definitely check it out. Find out more about it at comichouse.com. There you go. So this week, we've been looking forward to this for many, many weeks.
Yeah. Definitely.
I'm such a geek. I genuinely couldn't sleep last night. That's how bad it got.
I was, I was hit by the nose bit. I was like, oh my God. Like, Pat is just an absolute legend hero of mine. And then getting Scott Adkins on, I only watched Accident Man a couple of nights ago for the first time. And it was really good. So I was kind of a bit, not shell shocked, but it was good to talk to both of them.
We had a couple of minutes before we start this interview with him, didn't we? And immediately, Scott and Pat, we're all on the same wavelength, sense of humour. Yeah, it was good. And we thought, right, this is better. This is good. Let's get on. Yeah.
We're not going to mess about with a lot of rambling because you know what you're all here for. Scott Adkins, martial arts actor, who's been in so many good titles and we're big fans of. He's talking to us, as well as Mr. Pat Mills, returning guest and a member of the Awesome Pod family, isn't he, really, now?
Yeah, this is his fourth time on, I think.
Is it fourth?
Yeah, we love Pat.
Blimey. Here you go. Here is the Awesome Comics Pod talking to Pat Mills and Scott Adkins about Accident Man. Okay then, folks. This week, we're very pleased to be joined by not one, but two very special guests. Firstly...
Thanks, mate.
It's not just you, Tony. firstly, he's a man responsible for many of our listeners' favourite comic characters. He's also known as the godfather of British comics. And we are honoured to say that he is a returning guest to the show. Yes, it's Mr. Pat Mills. Hello, Pat.
Hi, guys. Hi.
Hi, Pat. Good to have you back, mate. Yeah.
And next, we have an actor. Yes, an actor to whom kicking ass is no stranger at all. And no doubt you've seen him in such films as Doctor Strange, Boyka in Undisputed. Have I said that right? Was that right? That's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. I always worry about my pronunciation of everything.
Because you live in the country.
Yeah, that's very true. and he's also been in titles such as, like, Hard Target 2, amongst many others. We all know him now, though, as Mike Fallon, the Accident Man. Yes, it's our pleasure to welcome Mr. Scott Adkins to the show. Hello, Scott.
Hello there, guys. How's it going?
Scott. Real, mate. Scott. Yeah.
So what did you say? Did you say Boyka or something else? Was it Boyka?
Yeah. Did I say
that? Okay, you got it right then.
Yes!
Yay!
You don't understand, Scott. I mess up so many names on this show every week. So it's good.
That's okay, mate.
Yeah.
No. I don't know how you can mess up Boyka, but never mind.
You'd be surprised.
He's already started picking on you, Vince. So this
is
good. I know.
It's only because we've gone live.
Yeah.
Anyway, only kidding. Yeah.
And seeing the way that he kicks out an Accident Man, this is not someone I want picking on me, to be honest. we've all seen the film, which is ace. Yeah. I think everyone here really loves film. So, it's cracking.
Thanks,
stuff. But before we delve deep into the comic book movie making world, let's start with this one. So, Scott, what is actually your history with Accident Man, the comic book?
Well, I think I was about 14 or 15. I'm not sure, but I was walking home from school, getting ready to get on the bus, and there was this news agent that I'd always go into, and they'd have various comics. And I was into my comics, mostly Marvel and stuff, but I was into various stuff that would take my fancy, and I would pick it up and buy it, give it a read.
Yeah.
And, of course, Toxic was out that month. And it was a bit of an obscure news agent as well. I think I was lucky to come across it. But I bought it, I took it back, I was reading it on the bus, and obviously Accident Man, that strip was in there. And I loved the comic strip so much. I loved how British it was. I loved how violent and dark it was. It didn't seem to pull any punches. I loved the graphic violence that was on display. And of course, I loved the fact that Mike Fallon, amongst being a hitman and someone who makes those hits look like accidents, was a master of martial arts. That appealed to me as well.
Yeah.
So I kept this comic for years and years, kind of expecting someone to make the film. Eventually, I always used to think, God, I'd love to see Accident Man as a movie. Somebody should do that. And then, 15 years later or whatever, nobody's done it. And I start thinking to myself, well, maybe I can be the one to do this.
Yeah.
And Pat might be able to help me out here, but I think it was around 2010 or maybe earlier that I first approached Pat and Tony Skinner about getting the rights so that I could, option the property and make it into a movie. I'd already started writing it with my writing partner, Stu Small, who's actually a friend from school, who remembers me bringing the comic book into school. We started adapting it anyway, hoping that we were going to get the rights eventually.
Yeah.
So when was it, Pat? Was it about 2010?
I think you're about right. Maybe 2009, perhaps. But and of course we met up, and we all got on very well. And Tony Skinner, my writing partner on Accident Man, is heavily into martial arts, so he very much related to your interpretation of it.
Brilliant.
Well, I remember that day coming in to meet you in London, the both of you, and I don't know whether you were just saying this to butter me up or whatnot, but I remember one of the first things you said was, wow, you look exactly like Mike Fallon. I was like, oh, this is going well. This is starting off good.
Yeah. Well, you said that to me, Pat.
No,
I think when you told me about it, you said he does. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean, you can see it, in the movie and you refer back to the comic book. Yeah, it's a natural fit. And the other thing, of course, is prior to meeting up with Scott, we had some pretty wretched experiences with Hollywood in all its shapes and forms, which I probably shouldn't really go into in any great detail. But other than to say that one Hollywood producer option it and wanted to turn him into an insurance investigator. In other words, a very different thing. Anyone who's had any experience of Hollywood will know that they take a comic book and then they say, right, let's make it into something else. So it was a great sense of relief, I think, for Tony Skinner and myself that if it's in British hands, it's going to be fine because Brits get it. I mean, American audiences do as well. That's the funny thing. But American producers always seem to want to, I don't know, turn these kind of characters into good guys at heart and all that kind of stuff. It's like they're not aware of Tarantino. So it was a great relief for us that it was put together by a British team.
Brilliant. Nice one. Did you both feel that it had a sort of darkness to it that was unlike stuff you'd worked on before, Scott and Dink? Or it's got that sort of wry smile to it, hasn't it? That perhaps is a bit different.
Clearly, in the comic books, it's very dark, and what's the plot in itself is as dark as it gets. You know, and it's not like it's the professional Leon where there's a line saying "no women, no kids." I mean, this guy, if the price is right, he's gonna go out and kill you.
Yeah.
But in the comic strip, it was obvious that there was a lot of humor there. And so straight away I knew, because I'm not known for making comedic films.
Yeah.
And my characters are pretty dour a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But it was essential that we needed to get the comedic elements in there, because otherwise it's just so dark.
Yeah.
You know, I doubt you would have got away with it to play it straight. So we needed to put those comedic touches in there, which is, of course, is in the comic.
Yeah. Well, you must have relished that a bit, though, mustn't you? Surely it's a nice release to have that little sort of humorous bit to it. I know you're kicking people's heads in left, right, and centre, but you're also, there's a little joke going on somewhere, isn't there? You know.
Well, I like films like that. I consider myself to be a funny guy. I mean, my mates think so anyway. All the humour in me. We wrote the script together, me and Stu. I think me and Stu have definitely got the same sense of humour.
Yeah.
It's very dialogue heavy. More so than any film I've done. And I remember Jesse Johnson, the director, having a word with me saying, "Scott, there's a lot of dialogue in this, right?"
Like, right.
"Mate, I wrote it." Yeah. No, but are you sure you're ready for that? Because he hadn't seen me do it before, so it was a question he needed to ask. And I was like, "Yeah, I can do it."
Good nod to the comic readers when Mike's bike, because in the original comic it's like a Japanese kind of super bike, and they make reference to that he's British. It is a Brit bike, isn't he? He's riding in that one. I'm not sure of the make.
It's a Triumph.
It's a Triumph. Yeah. As British as it gets. Yeah, I mean, we wanted to make the film pro British. We wanted Fallon to be pro British, but we made Big Mac in the comic book, but we changed it to Big Ray in the film. We made him absolutely pro British, so much so that he's up the Brexit.
He's all about the Brexit. He was wonderful. What a great what a great actor that guy is as well. I mean, just seeing him last night again, he's hilarious. Especially, I thought, well, there are so many favourite points parts in the film for me, but I think my all time favourite is probably the flashback scenes to Mike as a kid. Yeah. And meeting up with his mentor and all the rest of it. That was so hilarious.
Well, yeah, because I loved all this stuff in the comic, you know, and for me, I wanted to keep as much of the comic as we could, because, you know, there's a reason why I loved it so much.
Yeah.
And I wanted that to translate to film. But if we'd made the comic, and it was the first episode that I really wanted, if we'd made that strictly as it was into a film, it would have been about 45 minutes long. So we needed to expand it, obviously.
Yeah.
And Stu read the comic once, and then he refused to read it again. And all his ideas were coming from a different place at that point. And then I found myself trying to rein him back in and take it back to the comic. So that's why it does differ in some ways. But of course, that flashback is part of the comic and works great.
One of the things that I loved about it, because I'm out of all of us here, I'm the newest to the Accident Man sort of books. Like, I had never read them before until probably about 3 months ago. Am I right, Tony? Yeah,
I reckon. Yeah.
So I just read the complete Accident Man, and of course that first story just immediately just hits you in the face with so many one-liners and action and stuff. So when I saw the film and I was recognizing lines from the book and stuff, and that just elevated it as well. I thought, oh yes,
yeah,
you know, there's the source. It's not like they've forgotten about the source material. It's like, yeah, that line's too good not to put into a film.
Yeah, definitely. As soon as you,
but you'd also expanded it as well.
Yeah.
Which was so cool. It was the natural expansion that I found really impressive, because you know that it was quite minimal in some scenes. The Oasis, for example, and so you had this. I was thinking, did we have that character in the comic? I must go back and check, because it fitted so well. I'm thinking another great favourite, Jane the Ripper. My God, is she incredible, that actress. Fantastic.
Yeah, she's a fantastic martial arts performer / actress, and she's going to go a long way. I specifically wanted Amy Johnson for that part. But the funny thing is, we originally had the Japanese oil tycoon that was himself a samurai. And then we felt we wanted to get someone. It's hard to get people that can do the fighting and can act, you know. Yeah. They're few and far between. And we've got a lot of those guys in this movie. So for that character, we thought, well, let's make him someone who's a character actor that's going to come in and play that part. And we'll give him a bodyguard who can be like a stuntman, and we'll get like a Japanese.
No, I could see that. That's the great thing, that the changes like that, I could see why they were necessary. You know, in other words, I mean, to find a guy who's a great martial artist and a great actor and fits that role, that could have been. Well, obviously, there wasn't someone out there quite like that. So, I think the way you
we could have found one, possibly. Fine. Yeah, we could have found one. But, you know, we had Michael Jai White, Ray Park, Amy Johnson. You know, we've got these guys. We couldn't fly everyone in from the States and all that stuff.
Who was the guy on the motorbike?
Sony said, we'd like to put a female character in the movie.
Right.
That's what we want. And so we had a little think about it, and we had this this bodyguard character that you don't really meet until the end. And we thought, well, let's create Jane the Ripper, and we'll bring her into the Oasis beforehand, so she's one of the boys, if you like, and then she can be the end fight at the end of the movie. So that kind of worked out seamlessly, I think.
Yeah, perfect.
Who was the guy on the motorbike that you fight? Was he a foreign actor? I can't think of his name.
Well, that's a guy called Tim Mann, who is my go-to fight coordinator.
Oh, brilliant.
Time, yeah. He's an amazing martial artist and performer. He doesn't actually like stepping in front of the camera anymore, especially if he's behind it, choreographing the fights and directing the fights. But, you know, to save money, I said, listen, mate, you're playing that part.
I liked him because I knew there was some agenda there, that he was somehow different to the various other characters. Obviously, he was great at martial arts, but he was so unusual. And I thought, there's something going down here. And I think that's what adds to a movie, is when there's you sense a backstory. So the backstory in this case was the fact that the two of you are close friends.
Oh, yeah, with Tim, yeah, absolutely. He's an incredible fight director. I mean, God, I'm lucky to have him. And all the fights in the film were directed by Tim.
So with the sequences, like where you take on the two Special Forces guys, how long would that take to kind of choreograph and film and get to a point where it's done?
Well, this is where I had my producer's hat on, you see, because there was, and I love the flashback in the movie, and I think it works perfectly. Mm. I have read some reviews where people say that it slows down the film. I disagree.
Having
said that, there was also some, in script form, there were some people saying, I don't think you need this flashback. It's taken away from the momentum of the story. But I specifically needed 10, 15 pages that were going to be shot by Jesse while I could go off and do second unit to make fights longer. As a producer and the schedule that we had, I knew that I needed some time where I could work with Tim on these fights while Jesse's off filming the rest of the movie. And so I fought to keep that flashback in. So to answer your question, I was very lucky to have 3 days for the fight with Amy and 3 days for the fight with Ray Park and Michael Jai White.
Yeah, that's a hell of a fight, dude. Yeah.
Fucking
hell. Yeah. Yeah. My favourite move is when you kick the geezer in on the motorcycle in the head. I think it features in a couple of the... yeah. It looks like his head's fallen off.
Oh, yeah, I gave him a good old kick. I tell you what, he hurt my foot a bit. Selfish.
In that same fight, there's one of my favourite moments where he jumps in the air and you kick him out of midair. That's so good. Yeah.
Well, I can't remember how it is in the comic now, but originally I was going to put a metal bar in his front wheel and flip him off the bike like that. But that's a stunt. Wow. You know, yeah. That takes money, rehearsal, people might get hurt. So I'm a big fan of Jackie Chan, and I said, look, I just want to jump up and kick him off the bike like Jackie Chan does in Wheels on Meals. And we scheduled that fight as the last shot of the film. So I'd actually done the fight with Tim, and the kick where I kick him off the bike was the last shot of the film, so that if I got injured and they sent me to hospital, we still had the film intact.
Talk about suffering for your art there, Scott, mate. Yeah. Cool. We've got some questions from a few online people who I think Pat Abandai and us from the pod put out, anyone want to ask a question? To be fair, we got a million, but we're going to just work through a few of them, if you don't mind, guys. Is that going to be okay?
Yeah.
First one is from Jock Savage. I don't think it's his real name. Any plans for any sequels?
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. But the film needs to be a financial success. And we didn't get a cinematic release, unfortunately. So what I need people to do, if you want to see a sequel, if, you know, just between you and me, if you've downloaded that film off the internet for free, if you want to see a sequel, you need to go onto iTunes, go and get the Blu-ray, go and get the DVD, yeah, whatever you can do.
Yeah.
Help us with your money, because if it's not a financial success, we don't get to do the sequel, and it's as simple as that.
Cool. What would you go with for the sequel, guys? What, Pat, what would you prefer to see as the second story, perhaps? Yeah.
I suppose there's something to be said for maybe going for chronological order. So go for the next story. But I suppose it'd be down to Scott as to which one works best for him. I mean, we also have that American story, and I would assume that at some point, Accident Man in New York. And I would guess that if the reaction, if the budget grew, that would be a strong contender, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. There's a lot to choose from. I do enjoy the whole learning the dim mac off the kung fu instructor.
The death touch. Yeah.
The death touch, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's great.
The dim mac, yeah. But yeah, that's something we've got to think about. But yeah, there's a lot to choose from. And I don't know, maybe Pat's got some more in his back pocket that we don't even know about.
Well, I mean, Tony and I regularly talk about, we should really do some more Accident Man stories. And the problem often is finding the right artist, the right publisher, and all the rest of it. And it's usually ground to a halt for those reasons. But Tony and I talk from time to time about possible accidents, and of course that's his speciality. He would think up these appalling ideas. And just as a digression there, from a comic point of view, it actually came about because we were saying, oh, we should do an assassin story, and I said to Tony, yeah, but you know, there's so many hitmen stories out there. So he actually said, well, what about someone who kills people and makes it look like accidents? And he said he'd heard of or knew of such a guy, hopefully a long time ago. And I remember saying at the time, wow, you know, and of course, Tony has the technical knowledge that I lack on how these things are dreamed up. So, there's plenty of material for future Accident Man stories.
Brilliant.
I'll need to steal some of those ingenious accident ideas.
For those that download the movie for free, I think, Scott.
Yeah, we're going to need quite a few, I think.
Yeah.
Well, and I was going to say, it's also available, am I right, on Amazon as well, on Amazon.co as well as Amazon.com.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Sony UK dropped the ball a bit. We're not getting our Blu-ray DVD till April 16th, but it's pretty much out everywhere in the world now, except for the UK. But April 16th, it comes out in the UK. And I'd love people to support it, you know.
Yeah.
Cool.
Following on from that. Sorry, Matt. What
you say? I'll be grabbing a copy of that, definitely. Yeah, I want to see a sequel. So.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we also have a commentary with me and Stu, and we've got two special features. So, you know, it's well worth going out and getting the Blu-ray. You're going to support us, and you're going to get some extra features as well.
Cool. Jock follows on that question by suggesting that it becomes a run of movies similar to James Bond, which I think we'd all like to see. But he also asks, who's your favourite Bond? And I think he includes a caveat, Pat, you might not like Bond very much.
Oh, no, I like Bond, yeah. No, in my case, it would be Sean Connery, but...
Yeah. Scott?
You are, Sean Connery, but I do like Daniel Craig as well.
Yeah.
I think for me, and, you know, being an action lover, when Craig came on board, he really sort of manned it up a bit and took it that gritty way. But it was the first time since Sean Connery that you looked at him and thought, oh, okay, this guy can handle himself, you know.
Yeah, definitely. For me, it would be Roger Moore because I like the old safari suit action. Vince, Dan, what about you?
I must say, Casino Royale is fantastic. I loved that film. Yeah, I go for Craig.
Oh, I thought you were going Woody Allen there for a second.
I'd probably say Connery. I mean, I do love the. You know, Skyfall for me is my favourite Bond film.
Okay,
but I think because I love that sort of retro sort of Connery feel to those films. I think
nice.
Yeah. There you go.
Cool. Question from Chris McCauley. We've covered a few of these already. Actually, some of the questions that have come in, but he does ask, what was the particular aspect of the character that you focused most on, Scott? Is there any? What did you think? Oh, I really need to capture that to capture the character.
Well, I just didn't want to, as Pat was saying, the producers felt like maybe he was a bit too harsh and you needed to give him a heart and all the rest of it. And I didn't want to do that. I love anti-heroes. Yep. They're much more appealing to me than the bland hero. And I that's what I wanted to keep. I didn't want him to apologize for who he was. I wanted him to take pride in what he did. And it was as simple as that. You know, I'm a hitman and I'm bloody good at it and I enjoy my work and I get paid very well for doing it. And it was as simple as that. So, I mean, that barroom brawl, that sets the character up for me. He goes in there. He wants to test out his martial arts. He wants to get rid of his PNT. He picks some guys that have done absolutely nothing to him. And he proceeds to not only beat them up, but break arms and legs. Yeah. And then, as an added bonus, lights an old guy's fag and knocks them the fuck out.
Yeah, so that's nice that added extra. Yeah, I'd have to say.
That's what was important to me.
That's a classic South London move there.
There you go, mate. Fuck
it's a bit of a hard sell, isn't it? It's like, oh, he kills people for money, but he's got a heart of gold. I mean, how do you even do that? It's kind of, it's a very difficult one. So he's got to be an anti-hero, hasn't he? He's got to have that edge.
Yeah. And for me, those are the most appealing characters to watch. I mean, out of all the X-Men characters, I'm not a big fan, but I love Wolverine, and everyone else loves Wolverine. He's a badass, and he shanks people with claws on his hand. You know, there's a reason why people like to watch that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Although you know about a bit of that. You were in, weren't you, in Wolverine Origins, is that right?
I was the stunt double for Ryan Reynolds, yeah.
Right. Okay. Get you. Yeah. Cool. One from. Did you guys have any questions before I move on with some of the stuff from there?
No, I'm good.
No, you carry on.
Okay. One from The Murderist. This turned into quite a long conversation between me, him. I don't know who The Murderist is. He's got a weird picture. Between me, him, and Dan. He suggested that you played Remo, that they rebooted Remo.
Oh, yeah.
And you played Remo. We'd be right up for that. How would you feel about that one?
That's not the first time I've heard it, and it sounds like a great idea to me.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe I should look into that, yeah.
Yeah.
I think what's good, sometimes, because I've done so many films where I'm a legitimate martial artist, to do, like, an origin story of someone who, you see him getting trained and turned into a martial artist. Has anyone seen the brawl in Cell Block 99?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I think part of why that film is so great for me is when you see someone like Vince Vaughn, who's never done anything like that before, and you watch him become this legitimate badass.
Yeah.
It's kind of unexpected. And I think if you were going to do that with a Remo character, I'm talking myself out of a job. What am I doing? I'll think about it. Thank you for the advice.
One from us is, when are you going to do the Slain movie? What's happening there, Pat? I think this is perfect casting.
Well, from a casting point of view, Scott would be absolutely amazing because he's got the right hair and unlike a lot of contenders or people who've been, you know, they're said, what about this guy for Saint? I mean, the martial arts mean that, you know, someone like Scott could do the Salmon Leap and all these incredible Irish martial arts, like you leap onto the boss of a shield and then kick your opponent's head in and all that kind of stuff. But it's still a gleam in various directors' eyes, including Duncan Jones, who's always wanted to. If you think Scott of just how hard it was for you to put Accident Man together, Slain, I think, it's so tough. And I wish I had some clout, but the writer is bottom of the list on these things, so who knows.
It's difficult, isn't it? I think what helped me with Accident Man was, I mean, this is how I saw it anyway, Pat, I felt like it, because it was a bit more of an obscure property that not a lot of people knew about. So I felt like that helped me. Although, having said that, when I announced that I was going to make Accident Man on Facebook, I just couldn't believe how many people knew what Accident Man was. You know, I was actually quite surprised. It's bigger than I thought it was, I think.
It's that sort of underground cult thing, isn't it? Slain is a major character, but I think in the case of Accident Man, the fact that you were the producer and the star of it and so on meant that you had this creative control over it that I suspect on so many films that just isn't possible, and that's perhaps sometimes where they go wrong.
And I was quite stubborn with it as well, Pat. And there were people that tried to change things, and I let the deal go south because I thought, no, this isn't going to work. And I wanted to bide my time. And that's why it took so long between our first meeting and actually making the movie. And I know I strung you along a little bit for a couple of years, I think, because, you know, if I had to make that, I had to get the producers in place, the money in place. But it all worked out in the end.
What's incredible, I thought, was the fact that you did it on such a low budget. It's astonishing when you consider how much money is thrown at a lot of movies and all the things that were key in the first storyline, which becomes the movie. They're all there. And it's amazing what you can do if... Perhaps it comes down to the fact that because there's so much conviction and comedy and story going on, that you don't look at other aspects, that perhaps on high budget films you just get taken in by the scenery and perhaps not the intimacy.
You have to play it smart. You see, you have to find a location where you can set up a base and you know that you can film the pub there, we're going to film the mansion there. You need to find somewhere where everything is right next to you. So, because what happens is when you move the production from one place to another in the morning or in the evening, they're setting up the lights at the next place, blah, blah, blah. That's when you get killed on time. And before you know it, it's lunchtime and you haven't shot anything yet.
You must have had a great production manager or whoever organises all these practical things.
A fantastic line producer by the name of Ben Jackson. We couldn't have done it without him.
Cool.
Yeah.
Because you use a lot of the East End, don't you? You can see Canary Wharf, and you know, was it mostly filmed in London? Was it, Scott? Or?
It was all filmed in London. A lot of it was filmed in St Albans.
That's where I'm from.
Pub, you know, I mean, the pub, you know, that's about 30, 40 pages of the script, maybe 30 pages. So, you know, you can shoot a lot of time and pages in the one location. And, you know, that's given you a third of a movie. So we knew that when we were writing it. But yeah, all in London. I wanted it to be in London. I almost had to shoot it in Bulgaria at one point.
Right,
it wasn't
going
to happen, you know.
Yeah. That leads on to a question from Key Adkins. He's got your picture on his... I don't know if he's stalking you, Scott, but he's got your picture on his Skype thing. And he's asked, what was the most expensive thing in the filming? What was the most expensive sequence?
Most expensive sequence? Crikey. I'm not exactly sure where all the money went. This is the budget. This is what I said to Ben Jacks. This is the budget. I need 24 days, make it happen.
Right.
And, you know, I could trust him to do that. The most expensive, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Whenever Ray Stevenson was on the screen.
Was it his hair dye at one point? It's quite heavy.
There
hair
you
dye.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. You could get Michael J. White and Ray Park in.
Yeah.
They're long standing sort of martial arts sort of screen performers, and they're fantastic. I barely recognized Ray Park. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, he's in the film. That's him. It was
Ray's brilliant in the film. Well. Yeah, Ray's great because, I mean, what I said to all of them was, let's not try and be stereotypical tough action guys in this. We want to be lads in the pub having a laugh.
Yeah.
Okay. And even in the dojo before the fight happens, we're still just lads ribbing each other, having a laugh.
Yeah.
And, That was what we said to Ray, and I think he's brilliant in the film. He's a comic relief that we've never seen him do before.
Yeah,
when he does, there's a couple of especially when they're smashing that flat up. You know, when you introduce them and you kind of describe what they're doing, and they're smashing up a flat to make it look like a burglary, but they're doing it just to have a laugh.
That's great.
I've got to say, yeah, really
yeah, a bit
good
of Clockwork Orange in that sequence.
Yeah.
The one bit you elaborate as well when Mike is in Jill's flat and he sees the replay of how the burglary sort of murder takes place. That was really well done, considering I think in the comic pack Mike just says I knew it was these guys, but you kind of pull that out and really make it a scene of it. That was really well
done. I was quite envious of that. I thought that's a really good dramatic device where he's in the apartment and he's seeing in his mind's eye, and the audience are seeing these guys doing their awful things. And it got over that problem of what you might call talking heads or exposition. It was no longer exposition. It was a great scene, which otherwise you would kind of miss out on. And I guess it's been done elsewhere, but I've never actually seen it in a film before.
Yeah, no, we're really well.
Are they, we ripped off the Boondock Saints, so I'll tell you that.
Oh, Christ, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, you know, you get influenced by, Tarantino is famous for this, you know, except he's so encyclopedic with films, he can pick a movie from the 60s that nobody even remembers, you know. But it's the whole thing about doing it in the style of Guy Ritchie as well. And I see people saying, oh, you ripped off Guy Ritchie, but I don't see it that way. I see me taking this character, this comic book, this property, and instead of doing some bland, generic action B movie that we've all seen before, I wanted to take different genres and put it into there and show different parts of the movie in that way, whether it's film noir, whether it's a bit of Guy Ritchie, whether it's a bit of Tarantino, you know, whether it's a martial arts.
Yeah, I think it has elements in common with those, but I do not remember laughing out loud at Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels and similar films, much as I like them. But Even second time around, I was still laughing at these things. And okay, you might say, well, that's you know, because it comes from the comic book. But I don't think so. I mean, Lisa and I watched it again last night, and we were howling at some scenes. We thought they were hilarious. And so I think that's very separate. I'm trying to think of perhaps some Tarantino, but I'm not sure you'd laugh at things in quite that way. You admire Tarantino scenes rather than I think, oh my God, what's happening now, kind of thing. But with Accident Man, there's a vein of comedy that I think is very separate to those other films.
Yeah.
Well, a fart coming out of someone's neck can go a long way.
And the guy, go on, mate. Sorry.
There's a sequence again where the two the hitmen, the special forces guys, are explaining to Mike that they didn't sort of sexually assault Jill. They'd used a turkey baster, and in their world, that's fine. But if you kind of pull it out of that context, that's absolutely
it's
horrific.
Terrible. It's terrible. Real, but Michael Joe White just doesn't see the problem. What is the issue? It wasn't even our sperm.
They're sort of code between each other. That's okay. That's one little bit you get back, but like out of context, that's monstrous. It's very, very dark. It's great.
Funny.
The little guy who's I forget his name. He plays Fat Tony in a load of the movies like Final Cut and all that sort of thing. The one with the plasters. He was great as well.
Yeah, he's wonderful. Perry Benson. He's a great actor. I mean, anything I see him in, I start smiling immediately because He's really got an almost unique persona about him, hasn't he? He's very, very good. And he was perfect with all that stuff about elastoplasters and things.
I did get a smile out of the packet of plasters called Adkins, which I thought...
Yeah. Yeah.
That was something that was dropped on me at the last minute. Our... production designer Felix Coles came up and said, right, here's your plasters. It said Adkins on it. I was like, oh shit, okay, thank you. I wasn't sure about it, to be honest, but they'll kill you quicker than a bullet.
But yeah, Fred, he really catches
Perry Benson London. Though I've got to say, Perry Benson is brilliant. He will land that joke every time. I think he steals every scene he's in, and I have to say,
yes, he does. He's very good. Yeah.
I have to say, he came in for the audition, and for whatever reason, he couldn't remember his lines. and he blew his audition, and everyone was saying, I don't know about this guy, you know, he's got to know the lines, blah, blah, blah. And I fought to give him that part, because I just felt in my gut that he was going to be able to do it. I mean, you know, I'd seen what he'd done before, so it was obvious to me.
Yeah, he's in, like, Operation Good Guys and all that sort of thing, isn't he?
He's great in
crazy
that.
TV series. Very good. How did you get Ray Stevenson on board? Was he, because he's now played quite a few comic characters, isn't he, Ray?
Yeah.
He was the Punisher, Volstagg. I mean, he's just died as Volstagg as well, isn't he? Yeah. But,
spoilers. Yeah.
Well, when we started writing the script, me and Stu, you know, what we said was, okay, maybe I'm not enough to finance this movie. We need to write a part, the big Ray part, big Mac part. We need to make it a brilliant part for a good actor to want to play this role.
Yeah.
And I think we succeeded in doing that. And Ray Stevenson was the first on our list. We had to go out to 10 different actors. If we didn't get one of those 10, the film wasn't happening.
Right.
Ray Stevenson was the first on the list, and he wanted to do it, so it was perfect.
Real. Cool.
Awesome.
Did you hand out the comic to anyone in the movie, or did you try and keep it a sort of sterile line between the two?
No, we just kept it as the script.
Cool.
Like martial arts wise, Scott, can you tell us a bit about your background, what you've trained in?
I started off with judo when I was 10. I did a little bit of ninjutsu, not much to brag about. And then age 13, 14, I started doing taekwondo. And then it was kickboxing and, you know, MMA these days, whatever. Hollywood, though.
With the film martial arts, you have to practice on it, show it a bit, look a bit more showy. So there's a lot more high kicks and a lot more acrobatics involved. Does that require a different style of training than you would in a normal dojo?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I tell you what, it's not getting any easier. But, what I'll do is I'll train him in martial arts with my striking coach, and I'm hitting the pads and, you know, that sort of stuff, which is more about the real thing. And then I'll go to one of these tricking clubs with all these young 13 to 18 year olds doing amazing feats, making me feel old. And I just try and keep the more athletic kicks, which of course are good for the movies and the gymnastics.
Because right. The one you kind of jump and do like three kicks while in the air, presumably that's just a lot of time trying that on a heavy bag and falling on the ground.
Well, that's what's great about having Tim Mann as your fight coordinator. He's one of the best kickers on the planet. And I'm not bigging him up. I'm not joking. He's one of the best of the best. So he will invent kicks and say, can you do this one? And luckily for me, 80% of the time I can do what he does. So he makes me look very good, but that other 20%, I've got to leave it up to him and other guys like him.
Yeah, I watched Wolf Warrior last night, which is fucking brilliant. I've got to tell you, I loved it. And you do that move in that, don't you, towards the end of the movie? I think.
Well, I think I might have been on a wire for that one.
Right.
Now I don't use wires in my movies, but right. They wanted to put me on one. Okay. If it makes Wu Jing feel better. All right, then.
Because, Tony, you kind of big this up, saying that the martial arts in this film is absolutely top-notch compared to a lot of Asian films. And then watching it, and you're bang on, completely right.
Yeah,
he's taking a really big jump.
Yeah, I'm not Asian films, just any films. I'm less and less convinced by people punching each other in a lot of the big Hollywood films these days.
Oh, God, Scott, yeah.
And to see someone actually deliver a proper punch and make it look like it's actually going to hurt is a feat these days, I think. I came off the back of watching Star Wars, and then I watched Action Man, and I thought, no one in Star Wars looks like they can throw a punch. But if you watch everyone, even little Tony, Fat Tony, looks like he can throw a punch in that one. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously that's my thing. And Accident Man had that element to it. And I probably expanded on that even more than the comic book in some ways. And in a way, it was going against the fact that, you know, we've got this guy who stages these murders to look like an accident and nobody ever asks any questions. But on the other hand, I really want to have footage of me just smashing people up. So
yeah.
I wish I could have put some more of these inventive accidents in there. But because of the nature of this story and what happens to his girlfriend and he's on the rampage, it became a bit more about the fisticuffs. But I think if we get to do the sequel, we'll show some more of these ingenious accidents.
Yeah, the crashing car thing was brilliant.
Oh,
I was going to say the director did a great job on that whole that car swept into the chap at the bus stop. I mean, that was astonishing.
And the driver of the car's reaction had the stitches.
Brilliant.
I mean, it's a very dark moment, but I was laughing.
Well, that's straight out the comic book, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I've killed him. But it was actually the actual stunt driver that performed the scream and the horror of it, and he did a great job.
Oh,
and yeah, Jesse, our director, did a fantastic job organising that, because we didn't have the money to do it properly. What we wanted to do originally was we were going to put this guy in a phone box. He's making some dodgy calls to his mistress at a certain time every morning. We wanted a car to smash into the phone box and obliterate it. But, you know, we just didn't have the money to do it. So luckily for me, Jesse, the director, he is the nephew of Vic Armstrong, who's the stuntman for all the Indiana Jones films.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And the second unit director of many, many Bond movies. So he really understands how to put these stunts together.
It was the simplicity of it as well. It really looked like, you know, Mike Fallon, the Accident Man, has really thought this through. And you made the point that, you know, he's been out there several days waiting for the right car at the right angle, the right time, and wham! I mean, it's a really classic scene.
It worked well, and that guy was the writer as well. My mate Stu, the guy that gets killed.
Oh, was that him? Oh, cool.
Oh, right. I shall look at that again to check that out.
Well, we'll get you killed on the next one, Pat.
Yeah, definitely. You need a Mills cameo, definitely, in the next one. Yeah.
So with the Accident Man, when it was announced, and obviously now that it's out, Pat, has there been sort of renewed interest in Accident Man in people like asking you about the book, people discovering it and reading it and stuff now?
Yeah, there's on Facebook and Twitter, there's been that interest in, you know, the character. But I mean, it's always been a kind of underground cult hit.
Yeah.
And I think probably when it's actually available in the UK, I think that's when we should get that, further surge of interest. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Because it's it was on sale on Comixology, I think, as the movie came out in the States, wasn't it? I think. You could buy it on there.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So I bought it for, the fourth time around that time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was how I managed to read it as well, and sort of, it was one of those I can't believe because I wasn't really aware of its existence because I didn't read Toxic or whatever. But as soon as I read it, I thought, ah, right, this is the sort of book I love because it's so dark and Mike Fallon as a character, he's obviously our hero in a sense, but he's a horrible piece of work.
Well, yeah, I think in the film, in a different way to the comic book, but it comes to the same thing.
Yeah.
There's a kind of vulnerability. It's almost a celebration of his, what you might call, rather shallow character that somehow makes him likable. Yeah. And that was there in the comic book as well. And I think it did translate, actually, to the movie, because he has no awareness of... of ecological issues what's really going on in the world. And in a sense, we can all kind of relate to that because, you know, everybody else is being, including the lady in his life and her new lady, they're all being very worthy and right on. And here's this guy who's, on a certain level, he's actually an innocent abroad. And I think that somehow comes through in the film as well as the comic.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I'm glad you think that, because the way we tried to play it was that, okay, when it comes to his job and being a martial artist, he's top class, there's nobody better. But in a normal social circumstance, he's an absolute idiot. He's got no clue.
Yeah, when he's a kid, he's got that kind of, not a geek exactly, he's kind of a doziness about him. That you know, you can see this is where he came from. A kid to actually go up to a hitman and say, I'd like you to teach me how to kill, you know, these bullies and all that kind of stuff. There is a certain innocence about him. And that does make him very different, I think, to, you know, all the regular hitmen out there who are all kind of... what should we say? Very, very often, sort of, you know, Charles Bronson knockoffs, really. You know, grim faced. You know, monosyllabic.
Yeah, something terrible has happened to them. Yeah, so they've had to go on this path. Yeah, it's almost a bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'll tell you where it really, his sort of complete inability to function as a normal human being comes to the head for me is when his girlfriend's new partner, that woman, punches him in the face, and he sort of goes, "Yeah, that was a good punch," and that's about it, really.
That was an improvised line. Yeah. That was an improvised line, that was.
Okay.
Quite well.
Nice.
But what was important to us, because obviously in the initial comic book, his girlfriend becomes a lesbian and leaves him, and he's struggling to deal with that. And we wanted to make absolutely sure that no one watching the movie thought that it was homophobic, because, of course, that isn't the case. But
it's
we definitely wanted to steer clear of that because, you know, obviously wouldn't want anyone to think that.
Yeah.
But... that's why we wanted to get Ashley Green's character to run rings around him verbally and probably hit him with the biggest punch in the movie.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that really works, Scott. That really comes through. And another great actress there. I mean, she looked fantastic, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was great. We were lucky to have her. She did a great job. And she came in and filmed her scenes in 3 days and then was gone. And that's the way we scheduled it, because of money and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
But you feel her presence too. Through the whole film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, credit where credit's due to Martin Eamond as well. I think Pat as well. And I know he sadly passed, but his, especially in that first arc, his sort of nasty, punky sort of art really goes towards the feeling of this movie, doesn't it? You think?
Yeah, I think very much so. I think the scene where Mike Fallon goes into the bar to work off his PMT, and you've got the two. door security guys. I mean, that was very reminiscent of Martin's style. And a footnote on there, which I probably mentioned before somewhere or other, is Martin drew the first story, but he didn't draw subsequent ones because he said it wasn't violent enough for.
I want to see the violent version.
Tony Skinner and I were quite mortified because we thought, well, he said no, it's not violent enough, and he went on then to do another story.
Was it White Trash?
Which I believe was more violent, but it gave us some serious competition.
He draws the best Rottweilers as well. They're like the best Rottweilers ever in comics, aren't they? Those
ones. Yes, and I mean, I could understand, for example, why, you know, that scene's not in the movie. There's a scene in the comic book where these Rottweilers are unleashed on on Mike Fallon, and I imagine on a tight budget that getting Rottweilers to behave in quite the way they do in the comic book. Might be a bit of a challenge.
Imagine Scott getting a script that says, right, three Rottweilers attack you. You must go, oh, for fuck's sake, really?
Yeah, don't work with children or animals, especially in a low-budget movie.
Yeah, but that said, you did get the satanic mechanics and, where Mike Fallon deals with this heavy metal band. I thought you did that so well.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say... they did a great job for us. I can't think of their band's name at the minute. It escapes me, but it was a friend of one of the producers. They came in and they did that for us, and we used their actual song in the film. And then I guess they didn't know, but they probably do now that they've seen the movie, that Mike Fallon says their music is an acquired taste. Like someone else's vomit in your mouth. So thanks for that, guys. It's not for Mike Fallon, but it does have its audience.
Yeah. Doesn't he go on to sort of say, like, if I hadn't been paid, I would have done this for free after listening to some of the music?
Yeah, after listening to three of their tracks, I'd have fucking done them for free.
Brilliant. So what are you working on at the moment, Scott? You must have some... You put out a few good films a year, don't you? So what's next up? Is it Triple Threat must be next release, is it? Or
I'm not sure when Triple Threat comes out. Somebody said the summer. There's a film called The Debt Collector comes out April in Germany, and I think June elsewhere. And that's with the same director as Accident Man, Jesse Johnson.
Oh, cool.
Really happy with that film. It's a great story about this classically trained martial artist who's opened a gym, invested all his money into it, and it's about to go bust. And one of the guys he trains is a debt collector, and he convinces him to let him, work as a debt collector for a weekend to see if he can earn some extra cash. And it's his descent into the underworld, and it pretty much goes to shit straight away. But it's quite funny, and it's a very character-driven piece.
And that sounds like it could come out of Toxic itself, I've got to tell you.
Yeah.
It's an original script by the director, Jesse Johnson. It's great.
Excellent. And then are you working, are you filming anything at the moment you can talk about? Or?
I just did a film called Twilight Zodiac in China, and I'm going to Bulgaria next to do a film called Sinners and Saints 2. With a great director called William Kaufman, written by a great scriptwriter called Chad Law, with Johnny Strong. It's a bit of a B-movie gem, the first one. And then I've got a massive film after that, which I'm not at liberty to say yet, but I'm very excited.
Yeah, okay. Is it Doctor Strange 2?
No. Okay. I'm dead.
You never know in the Marvel Universe. You never know.
I've used my Marvel card now.
Does every actor get one then when they start in the business? Yeah. So they get a Marvel card and then they can just use it whenever they
well,
want.
Well, Ray Stevenson got two for some reason.
Yeah.
So there's always hope.
Yeah. Nice one.
Well, gents, it's been an absolute pleasure talking about X-Men. Scott, you're welcome back anytime. Well, we say that every week, but you immediately started threatening me as soon as we started this call. So
you're
welcome back anytime because that's what our guests do.
Well, before you wrap it up, I just want to say now that we've got Pat on the line, I just want to say to you, Pat, you know that from the age of 14, I had this comic book, and it has been my absolute dream to make this movie. And I just want to say to you, my friend, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to do it. I really appreciate it. It is a lifelong dream come true, and thanks for trusting me.
Oh, thanks, Scott. Tony and I really, really value what you've done on the movie, and thank you for that. That's lovely.
Yeah, it's great. I've got to say, speaking for the whole of fandom as well, you've done it proud for us as well, dude. I've got to tell you. Yeah, we absolutely fucking loved it, mate.
Yeah.
Skies. Yeah. Well, I made it for you guys, and I made it for the people that like those sorts of films. And if they don't like it, well, I didn't make it for you, so goodbye.
So we know all our listeners will enjoy it, so definitely check out Accident Man when you get your hands on it. Thank you very much, guys. This has been awesome.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Cheers. Bye, everybody. Thank you.
See you, Pat.
There you go. Look at
fucking
that.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, that was
great. That was great.
That was great fun. And thank
it
you
was
once
so
again,
good, wasn't it?
Thank you once again to Scott and Pat for joining us to talk about that.
Yeah, and if Scott wants to kill three nerds in the sequel, we are available.
Sure. So remember, if you want to get Accident Man 2 and get a sequel, you've got to go and get this on the Blu-ray, download it. Or buy a DVD.
Buy it legally. April the 16th is out.
April 16th.
Not long to go, but we highly recommend it. Fucking ace film.
If you like the weekly nonsense that is talked about on this show and the sort of sense of humour, it is right up your street, without a doubt. So there you go. Definitely check it out. So what a show already, gents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. But what else has been happening to us? Apart from, as you can tell, I'm a little bit under the weather. Tony's a bit under the weather. Mm. Dan, are you healthy?
Fine, yeah.
You got a green arm, though, spend...
Yeah, I did. I went to, had to go to a fancy dress party last night where you had to dress up as something beginning with H. And so I chose the Hulk.
Nice.
That was good. I was wondering if we could spend a considerable more bit of our time talking about snow. Because we haven't fucking talked about enough of that.
God. Yeah. I'm done with it. Just like I'm done with a lot of...
Snowballs.
Yeah. Did you make a snowman?
Nah.
No. Dan, you messed off. Did you really not?
I was too busy working. Nah.
Yeah, I was too busy trying to get in and out of London. It's like doing me in.
Yeah.
I was too busy feeling sorry for myself. There you go.
I've got to use this platform as an apology. There's a couple of parcels I've got to go out for the Awesome Comic podcast comic. And I went down the post office twice last week in Southwark. And they were shut for lack of staff. Was it a weather? So I'll go down there again tomorrow, or Monday, when you listen to this, and I'll get the comics out in the post. So please do take my most serious apology that you've not got them already. Or I'll stick in a sketch or two for you.
That's
way
nice
of compensation.
Of you, Dan.
It is nice. Right.
Yeah, I'm still waiting. Even if it had got posted, I'm still waiting for Comic Scene to turn up because my postman's, I think, just went home and just stayed there in front of the fire. I haven't had any posts for about 4 days.
If you're thinking, he could have put that in the front of the van and used it as like an impromptu snowplow.
Yeah. Get stuck in the snow. You can just wrap yourself in all the pages.
Are we going to spend another 5 minutes thinking of ways we could use comic
scene? You did do that joke last week, so let's move on.
Yeah, just before we do, my postman can just roll it up and stick it up his arse, as far as I'm concerned. He's been a lazy fucker so far, but there you go.
That'd cause some catastrophic injury the size of that.
Yeah.
Jesus.
That's what she said.
Oh my!
You pulled that one out, didn't you?
Yeah,
pulled out it.
Oh dear.
Okay.
Oh dear.
Right.
But, yes. So thank you to everyone that buys the comic, because we really truly appreciate it.
Yeah.
We do. Check it. Big Cartel store, where we've still got plenty of copies. Great comic, for a great price.
He's back.
He never went away, Tony. He never went away.
You're a fan of Accident Man. It's got the same kind of dark humour throughout Lots of Action.
Very true.
Does.
Yeah.
The martial arts sequence in Cockney Kung Fu.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just be a blinder.
If you like ladies, check out. Ass, have a look.
Yeah. There you go.
Only a pound.
Oh, dear. But, speaking of comics, though, Tony, something happened, didn't it, Tony?
Yeah. What are we talking about now? Oh, right, yeah, I see.
Yeah, has it cleared up? No, it's all right. Not that.
I feel better about it. I feel better about myself.
Yeah.
The
other thing. Tell us what happened.
Okay, right. Here's the thing to make you jealous. I know I'm sending you bragging photographs over the weekend, didn't I? So I did.
Yeah, and I hate you, but I love you.
Yeah,
you
know, but I've got you little presents. Yay! I've got you little presents, haven't I? So, yeah. So Barry Tomlinson, who, as all good English comic fans should know, was the editor at Tiger. He was head of boys comics at IPC. Launched Roy the Rovers, The New Eagle, Scream, which I know you two guys are fans of. He put a tweet out saying, does anyone want to help him clear his son's house out of annuals? Which fortunately, I happened to be looking at Twitter at the time, so I replied to immediately before anyone else did, which was a right touch, I've got to tell you.
I like to call those sort of moments the Esmonds.
Yeah. So after arriving home on Friday night thinking I'm lucky to have made it home, the snow was so bad, I about an hour later volunteered to drive about 8 miles and pick up a load of comics. So, you know, snow won't stop me getting comics, I've got to tell you. Yeah. I'll put my life at risk.
Who wouldn't? Yeah,
thank you. So I drove to Barry. Barry wasn't there. Barry's moved house, but it was the home of James, who is Barry's son. Now, James is also a comic writer in his past, and he wrote Action Force, Ring Raiders. He wrote some Turtles.
Amazing.
Yeah, nice. Quite a few things. So I got to have a chat with him and walked into his kitchen, and there were hundreds of annuals there. Battle, Eagle, Action, Dandare, Star-Lord, nice. Valiant, Roy the Rovers, Tiger... More and more. He actually didn't want any money. You know, I asked him for them if I could pay him a few times.
Yeah.
And they all said, no, it's all right. So I took a bottle of wine around, a box of chocolates, and I said, well, I'll make a donation to a charity. So we made a donation to the Dogs Trust, because we're a big fan of Dogs Trust here. Yeah. As a little donation to charity. And so I've literally been sitting in a chair made of annuals for the last couple of days.
That's how. That's what you've always wanted, though, isn't it?
I know.
Are you like Conan? You know the last scene of Conan where he's just.
You know that? Is it the Throne of Swords? What's that thing in Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
The annual throne. Is that what you've got?
Yeah, it's a bit like that. Yeah, I'm currently on a tornado annual from 1980. I'm reading that at the moment. That's good. Yeah.
Nice.
Fucking amazing.
You did send us some. Some photos of those bloody photo comics.
Oh God!
From
Abominations.
Eagle. Oh my God! Yeah. Oh. I think what was the one? I did send you one, didn't I? About a guy just gets in a taxi. Do you remember?
Was it?
And he was really annoying. So the taxi driver said, "Like you drive or something," and it's like,
yeah. It's called
Fucking Hell.
The Adventures of Fred, and basically it's a photo story about Fred getting in a car, and I sent you the message along with it. It says Fred is a
Oh God!
It strikes me as like, we've got this page to fill. What we're going to do is I'll just go outside with his camera, just make up some old bollocks.
And we did find a picture of Vince from 1973 when he was going to go and bury a dog or something.
That looked a bit like you, Tony. I'm not going to lie. That looked awful.
When we have a kid, I'm not saying if. When we have a kid, it looked like that.
Yeah. An abomination.
He will rule the world with an iron fist if he can be bothered.
So it was the most exciting day I've had for a long time. It's really good. So I got to chat to a comic creator, got to speak to Barry Tomlinson on Twitter and DM with him and everything. And like, he's now possibly going to be a future guest. We're really looking forward to that.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah. How cool is that?
Yeah.
That is very cool.
Yeah. So
I back to the photo stories though. I want to pose this question.
Oh no.
Well, do you want to pose for me? No. Has there ever been a good photo comic story?
I remember some of the horror ones from years ago, from when I was a kid, and thinking, fuck me, that's really frightening. But I don't know how they'd stand up now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean...
Yeah, I quite like the ones in the sun, like Dear Miriam.
Oh,
Aurelia.
Shut up,
they're pretty good to read.
Where everyone's in their underwear.
Underwear, yeah. You know, I'm thinking about putting some shelves up. And, yeah. They do take the piss out of them savagely in Viz. And yeah, I do like it for that. That's about the only ones I can recall being any good.
Yeah. And I don't necessarily have a problem with, you know, the idea of that sort of medium. It's just that I've never seen it really done really well.
You are quite violently against photo stories, I have to say. You did. It was an extreme reaction we got. Well, we don't get extreme reactions from you often, but
no. Well, I just don't believe in photos. That's what it is. I don't.
It's stealing my soul.
That's why. Yeah. Well, actually, that's why there's no those pictures of Tony Esmond, because actually he doesn't exist.
But it's like
I've drawn around myself for you a number of times. You know that.
Oh no, that was a big bit of photo
stories. They're like all the worst bits of comics and all the worst bits of film and TV.
Yeah.
They're like, why would anyone want this?
Yeah. And it's clearly just some geek who works in their office they got hold of.
Yeah.
But not just to, like, not a couple to of do them down, because those annuals have got some cracking, like, Doom Lord art in and stuff like that. But,
Yeah,
they're just the they pop up, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. Like, when I was a kid, I used to love the comic stories and, like, you know, even the letters pages and stuff, but I'd always see a photo story and go, oh...
Then pass
it. But to our lovely listeners, you might have seen a few that are good. So on the Awesome Comics Talk page, you know, someone start a thread and, you know, show us some examples.
Or maybe make your own ones.
Yeah. Oh God, that's a Pandora's box. Oh dear. Yeah. So very jealous, but.
Yeah, but you're getting a big pile of books already. Yeah, I'm seeing you in a couple of weeks tonight.
I know, you're far too generous, Tony. You are.
I know.
Yeah.
You got me a Robocop annual in there.
Oh, what did you say, Vince, when you saw that? You said, Dan's just done a sex wee or something.
I think I could hear Dan have an orgasm. I think that's
it, yeah.
Yeah. And did you, Dan?
Pretty much.
You downplayed that completely. Yeah. It does look great, though. I must say, that cover's amazing.
Yeah.
So there you go, folks. A week doesn't go by without Tony getting into some sort of comics escapade.
Shenanigans. Yeah. I like to call them sexcapades.
Sexcapades.
What do you call them out there? You can let us know at... No. Do we have any shout-outs this week, gents?
Yeah, I've got a few. Yeah.
Go for it.
Alan Henderson wrote in and reminded me, as quite right he should have done, to mention Dunfermline Comic Con. Due to the Beast from the East, and that isn't a name for Dan's toilet parts, the Dunfermline Comic Con was cancelled. It had been organised by Little Shop of Heroes, which is the local comic shop, which is a great shop, apparently. If you have a look at a GoFundMe page, it's been set up by Visit Dunfermline. You can donate to it, because they shell out a lot of money to get these events started.
Yeah.
And then when they have to cancel them last minute like that, it is just terrible, terrible news and a possible sort of financial catastrophe. And if you want to see them come back, and if you just want to do them a favour and sort of try and recompense these good people for organising a proper comic convention, then go to their GoFundMe page and do that. I would also like to plug Gareth Hopkins's Alpha Pod Flight.
Yes.
She was kind enough to have me on. I know Ken's been on it. A few other people, including Gareth's kids, have been on it. And very amusing they are too. And it basically takes an issue of Alpha Pop Flight and we talked about it. I may have suggested some sort of incestual relationship between Aurora and North Star, which we sort of giggled about. But it was good, really good fun, and really nice to read a classic old series like that. I really had a good time with that one. Yeah, they're my two.
Awesome.
That's a great idea. You can now as well. I think
it is. Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Yeah,
you can get it on iTunes, can't you? Because people say we get a bit Yeah, now on iTunes.
Yeah, I think it was on SoundCloud to start off with. I think people were having problems streaming it or stuff, but you can definitely download it now on iTunes. Yep.
What obscure comic would you... Well, not that obscure, but what comic would you do a podcast about?
Oh, interesting.
Ooh.
I think I'd do Marvel Team Up, the original run.
Oh,
because you get to talk about different characters, sometimes different art teams.
That's a good shout. I don't know, Forceworks.
Yes.
Although I might do, you know, Night Stalkers. I was quite a big fan of that. That's.
I would love to find a copy of that where I could read it all in one go.
Yeah.
Cheap trade or something.
I'm surprised that Marvel haven't really, you know, I know they've dabbled a little bit with those supernatural characters and Blade, you know, they rinse the sponge of Blade every so often, but Night Stalkers, I think it's due a good sort of horror book comeback, isn't it?
You get the right writer on that and you can do a good comic out of that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what would be good as well, Tomb of Dracula.
Oh dear!
Wasn't Blade first turning up in one of those?
Yeah, that's where he first appeared. Yeah, he was one of the characters. Now, what about you, Dan? What would you do?
I don't know. I was thinking, being that I've got, I'm quite lazy. I might do Dragon's Claws. So only have 6 episodes. Or 10.
Oh dear! I still want to see like a Dan Butcher proper drawing of all of the cast of Dragon's Claws.
Yeah,
just doing something really, really horrible to each other.
Yeah.
I'd like that.
I think once I'm putting Vanguard to bed, it's got about 3 or 4 more pages of that on this issue, and then it's kind of Viper and doing a few other personal bits and bobs.
We've got a little project, haven't we?
Yeah, we have got a little project on the boil. Yeah,
yeah.
So Little Heroes
anthology, volume 2.
Yeah.
Me and the Guns are doing a little story for that.
Sounds ace. Was that the one that we were talking about the other day?
That's the one. Yeah.
I'm already on board. Not to do anything. I just want to read it.
I wanted to go with the SS Death Camp Warlords Go to Hell, but that was knocked back.
She-Wolf of the SS was taken.
Didn't realise it's a kids' anthology, so okay. I went for Tony's script instead.
Yeah, that is quite a common comment from anyone I've been involved in or has heard I'm writing for that. Has gone, how are you doing that?
Yeah, no.
So I've done one already. Don't
give the man a break, you know.
I did one in the first volume and I didn't swear in it.
Yeah. He can behave himself. I've seen it.
Have me round your house and I'll prove it.
I think you can still get
issues of the first, still get copies of the first issues.
Oh, can you?
For Little Heroes, I believe so. If we do so, I'll stick up. I haven't got the linked hand, but you can stick it in the show notes.
And it's also available on Comic House.
Oh, of course.
There you go.
Scander did a great job on that. Have a look at Susie's art on my story. Brilliant, it is. Really good. Yeah. I'd like to point out. That's it. I'd like to point out, and you did the lettering down, didn't you?
Yeah. I did, yeah.
And I'd like to point out on the script that I sent you today, there is a little sexy picture of me indicating how someone should be sort of where their hand should be.
Oh, to look at that.
Yeah,
look forward to that.
Might have gone into your junk file.
I'll look at that just while I go to bed. Hopefully that'll set some dreams up.
Oh, God.
And I'd like to also thank everyone who wrote into our competition. I think we're going to roll it on for another week, are we, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So who would each of us go on a date with? They are... I think I'm coming off worst in the replies. Yeah.
People have
I think.
Been
what do you think?
Nice to
what me. We've had is fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
I was dying. Everybody good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's our competition. And for a year's subscription to Comic House.
Yeah, so that you can gift to a friend. Thank you yourself. So.
Yeah.
So if you can think of an amusing answer for what was the question again, Tony?
Who would we each go on a date with? It can be an imaginary person or a real person. Anyone you fancy.
Yes.
I'd go out with an animal or gypt or some kind of fruit or something like that as well, you know.
Are you a fruitarian?
I'd go on a date with a carrot.
That's not a fruit.
Could have,
wasn't it?
Vince, Vince going out with a concept or a philosophical stance.
Yeah.
That'd be quite yeah. weird.
Flirting with a philosophical stance. Ooh. Existentialism, I believe you're quite
saying. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
yeah. Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. But yeah, whatever the answer is, send it to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com and you could be in with a chance of winning a year's subscription to Comic House.
Yeah.
So there you go. Are we all done for the shout outs?
I am.
Yeah. I've got a shout out that's going to factor into my recommendation, so I'm going to hold fire.
What a hell of a segue, because we're on the recommendation section now. So why don't you double it up now, Dan?
That's a great idea.
Don't you patronise me, Butcher. Don't you patronise me.
Oh God!
I came off a lot more patronising than I am today. So I got this. I backed this comic on Comic Kickstarter, Transylvanian Nights issue 1. Yep. It's great. I loved it. It's written by James McCulloch, art by Johnny Cannon, letters by Rob Jones, designed by Gavin Boyle, edited by Pete Jeanpool, and published by Comic House. 40 pages. It's you probably know Johnny previously for work on the Divided and the United, the super team. That's a great series, love that. James McCulloch, the comic he writes on now, escapes me, but they've played an absolute blinder here. It's really good. It's set 10 years after a vampire war, and Transylvania's under threat again from Count Dracula. As General Van Helsing hunts down the Count, two weary circus performers stumble on a secret that could change everything. Coming from a love of old monster movies, James McCulloch and Johnny Cannon take the classic characters Dracula, Van Helsing, the Wolfman of Frankenstein's monster on a new adventure. So, yeah, from what we get to that, you've got... let me go into what I put. So the story begins, and you kind of like follow Van Helsing, and he's now serving the current Transylvanian royal family. He's always kind of brooding on the Count, and he doesn't feel like the kind of business is done there, even though everyone else is saying like it's kind of done and over with. But when the young prince is kidnapped late at night, or like some demonic creature, he thinks the Count's back in action and goes flying off to kind of tackle the issue. It's then when you get introduced to the Wolfman and Frankenstein's monster characters, and they're with a troupe of traveling circus performers who are going to appear at the royal court. And obviously, with the prince gone, that their performance is knocked on the head, and they come across something which sort of galvanizes the two characters into action. What's going on isn't what it appears to be. There's a lot of kind of intrigue and stuff going on. Don't really want to go too much into it, because it kind of, you get big plot spoilers, but it's really good. I really enjoyed this comic. The art by Johnny is so good. He's really coming on leaps and bounds. There's like one full page of the castle, which the period details on are great, and that's like throughout. It builds a real nice atmosphere. Feels like a living world in which these characters are inhabiting. It's good stuff. And same way with James McCulloch's writing is absolutely spot on. He pays homage to like the roots of these characters and the origins of where they come from, but gives it like a kind of fresh voice and a fresh spin. It feels a bit like the old kind of Marvel monster books, with a bit more of a take. I'm really looking forward to reading more of this. I've got this through on Wednesday or Thursday, downloaded it. I read it while on the train home in the snow, and it was a great, great little read. And it features some pinups in the back by Lyndon White, Ian Laurie, and myself. Nice. And if you want to go check it out, grandmasterwook.co.uk/shop, and it should be there. You'll be able to get it there. And the shout out, which is going to tie into, the guys are going to be signing copies at Forbidden Planet Glasgow on March the 7th. From 5 to 8 p.m. So that would be, I think it's the Wednesday. So a couple of days after you hear this, you can, if you're up that way, pop in and say hello and get a copy and get it signed.
Nice.
Yeah, recommend.
Good. I've got Untitled by Bob Turner. Bob, who did Flood and Death Rattle, do you remember? Is very sort of abstracty guy. I was going to go with something else this week, and this popped into... my inbox, and I made that, oh, new comic from Bob, great. And I'm a big fan of Bob's work, and I've been sort of watching some of the designs grow over the last few months on Instagram, because he's well worth following on Instagram, and really interesting guy, a Scottish creator. I think he's from Edinburgh. It's hard to describe, as are all of Bob's books, and not in a bad way at all, in a really interesting way. He's described it as the creation myth that comes from Death Rattle and the Flood books, from the Flood universe. It's kind of like a strange head of a sort of prehistoric, how would you describe it, a sort of prehistoric shape of a dragon's head, maybe, or an animal's head, a sort of sculpted head. You might see it on the end of a sword or something like that, a sort of mystical kind of like headed creature. And it's just what happens to that head, and it's sort of, I'm going to say it's almost hypnotic to watch. It's got this sort of transformative nature to it. It's a weird one, because it's not a straight story. It's just the things that happen and the art, and he places stuff on a page and he experiments with stuff in different ways. And it's all of it, nearly all of it, is centered around this sort of strange demonic face. And the face sort of transmutes and acts out and changes, and things happen to it. There's one point where it sort of disassembles and assembles again into its sort of bodily parts and then comes back again. Really clever. It's unlike anything else you're going to see. It's got that sort of knowing quality as well. There's a real personality to his work that you can't put your finger on it until you've read it. And he uses great use of sort of functional colour. And texture to his work as well. Really interesting. And more so, I think the textured side of things comes more to the fore in this book than it had done in the previous stuff. Just gorgeous stuff. Really, really gorgeous. Bob's got his own corner of the world, actually, and certainly of the small press world. He sort of sits there and he sort of dares to be different. And he's not a sort of flashy guy. He sort of, you know, he just makes these really interesting comics that I can't sort of recommend highly enough. If you go to castlerockcomic.bigcartel.com, or if you follow him on Castle Rock Comic on Twitter, you'll see some more of his work. It's not quite ready to be released yet. I got to see a preview copy of it, which is the reason I'm being slightly guarded about what happens in it. But yeah, really worth looking to. He's going to be at some of the Scottish conventions, I believe. I know his mates with the aforementioned Alan Henson, and I think they sort of quite often will share a table together. So pop over and get, well, both those guys' works, because they're both great and both really interesting creators, doing some really interesting stuff that they don't get enough credit for, when some other people are sort of make a big play on the fact that they're very experimental. These two guys are doing something that nobody else is doing. So yeah, go and see that. It's Untitled. He plays about with titles and he fucks you up. Do you know what I mean, with his title? So it's called Untitled by Bob Turner. But whether it will stay like that, I don't know. But highly recommended. That's my one, guys.
Nice. Well, my one this week, like Tony, I was going to talk about something else, and I've switched tact at the last moment. I wanted to focus on a book that we've talked about a few times on this, but I'm not sure if it's ever been in the recommendations section of the show, and that is Lost Light by Claire Spiller.
Yes, yeah, great book.
Yeah. Wonderful book. For those who don't know, here's the little blurb about it. Every night, Maeve lights up her house with lamps to keep the wilderness away, but the more light she creates, the greater the shadows she casts. Only when her lights go out is she able to see how bright the night really is. Now it's 44 page A5 comic, and which is all about the effects of light pollution, which I think is a subject that I've never experienced in a comic before. Have you guys ever seen that in a comic?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. And it's basically about like everyone's relationship with the night sky and nature, etc. And it's completely I won't say silent, but how could a comic be silent? Basically, there's absolutely no words whatsoever. So it's a visual story, which, as it says on the website, makes it suitable for all nationalities and ages, which I think is brilliant. It is very much an all-ages book. And it is about this character, Maeve. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. She lives in this little hut, and she's, you know, very much she uses artificial lights, you know, to keep her, especially at night. She lights a fire, and everything outside of the light seems quite dark and scary. And then she heads into the woods at one point with a small sort of lamp. And it's only when the lamp goes out, it gets taken by a creature in the forest that runs away, that she suddenly realises the beauty of the actual night sky and the creatures, and how everything completely changes when the lights are off, as it were. And it really is. It's a beautiful book. It really, I mean, Claire's artwork in it, the way she renders the creatures, have almost like this ghostly, it's almost like a, how to explain it, it's like a ghost that has almost a galaxy within it, you know. The nature of how she draws it, you know, these wonderful sort of shapes of birds and rabbits and stuff, but within them there's these wonderful blue watercolors, these purples, you know. Yeah. Even though there is no light, it's more colorful than ever. And that's, it really is about sitting back and taking note of when you take everything artificial away, you know, the beauty that's there, and not missing out on it. And it's how the character, you know, she goes on this journey through the forest, and all the sort of forest creatures, they're almost alien in a way, but they're so nice and loving, and it's such a wonderful visual book. There isn't a book that looks like it. I've never seen a book like this, because certainly Maeve has a sort of a like a cloak, doesn't she? Sort of like a, what is it that she's wearing over the top of it? It's like a shawl, and that has a colour to it. The creature gives her like this top, and it's sort of fluid and moving, and it's just, I want one. It looks that nice.
I was really impressed. This book came, I had never seen this book before.
Yeah.
I hadn't really heard of the creator, and I remember before they came on the show, I saw it and I thought, wow, this is top drawer.
I've read this one. It was really good.
Yeah.
It was a little while ago I read it, but when you started talking about it, I was like, yeah, I've read this. This one's good.
In fact, such a point where a book editor came to me recently and said, oh, who's about at the moment who you could recommend? And I highly recommended this creator. Yes. Just superb stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really good.
I mean, to do a sort of a silent story anyway is quite difficult. But the reader completely fills in all the... It doesn't need words. But the reader completely fills in the story in the words, and you know, there's not even any sound effects in there, and it doesn't need it, because this comics and graphic novels are a truly visual art form at the end of the day, and this is a perfect example of what can be done without any words. I mean, that's not to say Claire didn't script it. I'm sure she completely scripted it for herself, but just the storytelling is just absolutely top notch. It could make a wonderful animated film.
There's this
pool full of fish that she bumps into, and basically the water is almost a reflection of the sky above, you know. Everything just seems to have this sort of almost galactic, you know when you see pictures of like the galaxy, and they're almost sort of watercolors, aren't they? It's like oil and water, you know, the yellows and the blues, and it's really captivating.
Yeah,
and I know I've said it before that the cover is one of my favourite, certainly indie book covers on the market at the moment. And Claire, even when she was on the show, she took note of our episode about cover design.
Yeah, we spoke about that, didn't we? Yeah, that's good. And writing, great.
Yeah, I don't believe we say any kind of help on this show, you can't miss it. Like, I think she's part of the Wine and Zine collective, who are just putting out top-notch stuff anyway. Tony, did you pick up their dog charity?
No, and I'm kicking myself, because you know what big fan of dogs I am as well. Yeah. And myself and Bryony do swap pictures of dogs occasionally online. Yeah. No, I'm kicking myself. I must order that, actually. Yeah.
They will be at Cardiff Sice on June the 2nd.
They're also at Swindon.
Yes. Oh, are they? Oh, brilliant.
I think so. Yeah, I think they are.
Yeah. Well, we've got no excuse not to buy more of this. So if you go into the Swindon Comic Shop on March
24th,
definitely pick up some of the Wine and Zine books. And Lost Light is a little gem, and I think one of the best ways to describe it, at the back it's got links and stuff for Claire, but it also talks about light pollution. It's having an increasingly disruptive effect on our wildlife. Nocturnal pollinators, migrating birds, and newly hatched sea turtles are just a few animals that suffer from our dependence on artificial lighting. And then quite poignantly it says, try not to lose sight of the stars for the streetlights. Beautiful stuff. So definitely you can get it at clairespiller.co.uk. It's on her site. You can find out more about her work if you at Instagram at the Claire Spiller. Oh, she started calling herself The.
We're the awesome pod.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And I'm going to start talking about myself in the third person. On Twitter, you can find it at Claire Spiller. and on Facebook at Art of Claire Spiller. Definitely check it out. We're big fans of the Wine and Zine Collective, but Lost Light is one of my fave books I've read recently. Yeah. So there you go.
Cool.
That's mine.
I've got a quick one, and it's a selfish one. It, just very quickly, Slice Quarterly is out again, issue 9, I think it is. It's got a brilliant cover by our friend and the lady who's running the Swindon event, Sarah Harris. Just an astounding out the gate. I've never seen really this sort of art from Sarah, and it is incredible. But the first story is by me. It's an old story of mine called Bingo Bonanza, which I collaborated with a Japanese artist, Michiru Morikawa. And Michael Phoenix colours it. And Gustas Gimenez did the flats. I'm really proud. I'm really proud of this story. If you, it's free to download Slice Quarterly. Go to slicequarterly.co.uk and see what we're talking about. I had a really interesting collaboration with Michiro around this story, and we sat and chatted about it at Bristol many, many moons ago. It got released in a comic that I published that sold about 5. So Ken said, "Have you got?" Ken said, I suggested it to Ken, and he said, "Oh, brilliant! I'd love to do that. Would you mind if we colour it?" And Michael has done an absolutely brilliant colouring job on it. I absolutely love it. It only arrived in my inbox a couple of days ago, and I've just been staring at it, thinking, "I remember this story. Bloody hell, that looks great!" But there you go. So that's my sort of selfish one. Yeah, there you go.
Nice. So there you go, folks. So much awesome to check out this week, as always. And we hope you enjoyed the interview with Scott Atkins and Pat Mills.
Yeah,
It feels so long ago now, but
we've calmed down now. I'm glad we're behind the curtain, but we're recording this during the day, aren't we, today?
Yeah.
If we're recording this at night, I don't think I'll get any sleep. I'm still quite excited about, not only do I get to chat to Pat about comics, who's our pal, but also Scott came on, who's in some of my favourite movies ever.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And apologies to everyone who we didn't get to answer your question. They were kind of answered already in the chat we'd had. So thanks to Jock Savage, Marco, John Ottaway, good old John, Kian Adkins, the murderist, Chris McCauley, amongst others, who sent in some really great questions. But we didn't get you all, but we answered a few of them.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And to anyone who's checking out the show for the first time, because I know we've got a lot of word on Twitter, on social media and stuff, since we announced this episode. Welcome to the show. Thank you very much for listening to us. Be sure to check out all the past episodes and stuff. We've done a few of them now. We've done all right, haven't we, so far, getting it without killing each other.
Pleased. There's some we were actually quite well behaved this episode, weren't we?
Tony,
it gets worse,
I've got,
although I did say the C word earlier.
Yes, I've written that down on my show notes that I need to edit out, so thanks for that. Dear, unbelievable. I do not want that to be a common occurrence.
We stopped for about 2 weeks.
And then we're back again.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, what another fantastic show. We've got plenty more awesome shows coming up to check out. But let us know what you thought of this week's episode. Something a bit different for you, will it? We'd like to keep it a bit different now and then.
Yeah.
But you can let us know what you thought. There's several different ways, but you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be announcing guests and generally just causing havoc online, much like we do on facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you're on Facebook, if you do the Book of Faces and you occasionally like interacting in a group, there's only one group on there that's worth joining. And I'm being sincere here.
If you like a bit of group action.
Yeah, then you should go search for Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook and join it, because it is that. It's not. There's not hard selling. There's nothing. There's just people having good fun, talking about comics, talking about process, talking about events, and generally just being nice to each other, which I'm quite pleased with. I haven't checked it out for a couple of days, but I know there's been a lot of activity going on. So there always is activity when it comes to us. And once again, if you want to win a year's subscription to Comic House, what is the question again, Tony?
Who would we each go on a date with? Now, you have to give a bit of reasoning. It can be anyone, imaginary, historical, just a made up person, if you like. But the best one will be able to gift a friend or keep for themselves a year of Comic House.
Yeah, a year,
is that right?
Yeah, it's a year of Comic House.
Pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. And quite a time to get it, because the coming year is going to be quite exciting, I think. So there you go. And you can send your answers to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Right. I think it's time for us to head off into the sunset, isn't it, gents?
Yeah. So social media links.
Yeah. Right, Dan, don't tell me how to do my show.
Well, we missed them last week, so.
Oh, God, yeah. Yes. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review. We've had a few lovely reviews on there.
Yeah.
When I see it compared to some other podcasts, we get some nice reviews on there.
We do, yeah.
So thank you very much. And if you, whether it was on what, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other pod networks are we on, Tony?
A little shout-out from last week, Podcabbage.
That is still one of my favourite moments of my life, I think. That outtake. It's terrible. In terms of laughing at your own jokes, that was the epitome of laughing at your own jokes.
And I love the fact that somebody found, I think it was Mr. Prolix, found a gif of a cabbage talking.
I know. Yeah. The joke just keeps on giving. It's amazing. Yeah. I love it. But where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Just quickly give a shout out to our guests. So for Pat, if you go to @PatMillsComics on Twitter and go to millsverse.com, you can find out all about his great books that are coming out. He's got some great novelizations at the moment. ABC Warriors in 2000 AD is fucking astounding at the moment. Yeah, really good. And don't forget to pick up a copy on Blu-ray of Accident Man on April 16th. You can find me at SOSEZOHYZ or at neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk. Two new things went up today, so go and have a read. Yeah,
nice. Where can people find you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Which is kicking it at the moment, Dan.
Yeah, I really good, man. That.
Thanks,
I'm invested. There you go. And you can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmousefrommars.com. And if you would like to buy issue one of the awesome comics, because we've got to shill that again, why not? Where can people get that?
Well, you search the Awesome Comic Pod Big Cartel store, will pop up, and you can buy either the digital or the printed version there. Digital's £1, and the printed copy's £3.
There you go.
Cool. Or you can go to Orbital Comics in London. Yes. You can go to the Comic Den in Rochdale, or you can go to Destination Venus in Harrogate. Or on the 24th, we will be in Swindon. Is it the Incredible Comic Shop? Is that the name of it?
It is indeed, yeah.
Yeah, for a sort of small press day, and we'll have copies there as well. There you go.
There you go. And thank you to everyone who's bought it so far. I enjoyed it. There's plenty more awesome to come. So there you go, folks. That was this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you again to our guests for joining us. We had a great time.
Yeah, amazing.
And from Dan, Tony and myself, have a brilliant week. Stay safe, stay warm as well. If with all the weather and nonsense that's going on, read loads of comics if you're stuck indoors, and as always, stay awesome. See ya.